This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, let's get to the Pettycast. I'll start by being a little bit petty, watching the highlights of the Celtics and the Knicks on TV in the studio here from last night. And the Celtics lost that game, Seth, because they shot 15 of 60 from three. They missed 45 three-pointers. It's a record that's the most in postseason history. And yet my big takeaway is like, wow, they were able to get open enough to shoot 60 threes in a game? Because we just got done watching the Rockets struggle to get 15 of them up in Game 7 against the Golden State Warriors. Yeah. I was like, can you turn him up, please?
15 for 60 from three is that's not good basketball to watch. That's not fun, man. That's everything your grandpa is complaining about with modern basketball. That's exactly the embodiment of it.
Yep. So there you go. 15 of 60. So the Knicks, two upsets. Knicks and the Nuggets win last night. All right. Pettycast time. Marcus Spears. I want to run this through the Seth Payne analogy meter. You like making analogies. You're very good at it. You like making relationship analogies, I think, especially. So anytime I hear one, I'm like, all right, does this hold water with the master of the relationship analogy, Seth Payne? This was Marcus Spears' analogy amidst a sea of petty about James Harden on TV over the last few days. This was Marcus Spears' James Harden dating analogy.
James Harden is like the dude that got a girl and he sets up nice scenes and he never proposes. They never gonna get married, okay? He's gonna date you. Y'all gonna stay together. People gonna say y'all a great looking couple, but he's never gonna marry you. That's what I compare these Game 7 to.
Okay.
I like that a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if that guy exists. I don't know. It sounds like something out of a romantic comedy where some guy is like, hey, has the perfect weekend planned. They're on the beach. He's got a cushion like sitting down between him and the woman as if he's going to kneel down on it. Yeah. And it turns out that the cushion is just so they can take a nap together.
Yes.
I like that analogy.
Okay.
It's an extra good analogy because I'm not sure I even knew. I don't even know if the guy he's talking about exists. Is there a guy out there who just continually sets up like proposal scenarios and then bails on him?
No.
If there is, this is the perfect analogy.
Yeah. Like that's. I mean, that would be next level if that were the case. I just waited a long time to get engaged. Like, I'm not that guy. I waited eight years. Yeah.
It is. James Harden is a guy he's been good to you. For a long time, I was like, wow, we have a nice stretch of a few months here with James. And then he comes in one night as you're sitting down to watch, The Odd Couple or something. And he says, just got off the phone with your dad. And you're like, oh, what were you talking to him about, James? Oh, nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. And he winks at you.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh gosh, I guess he's going to, whoo. And then you go out to dinner and he gets drunk and pukes on the waiter.
And then, oddly enough, the woman in that whole relationship is still defending James to all the naysayers in her family. Like, hey.
Right, you guys don't understand.
Yeah, you don't get him, man. Yeah, I know he's ruined me once a year setting up engagement scenarios, but you don't know what the rest of the year is like, all right?
Yeah, he's not like that. Well, no, but then perfectly is eventually you dump him and he goes off to some new woman who's like, he's different this time. Yep. We have a relationship that's different and special.
And it's the same. Now he's on his fifth woman.
That's a good analogy, Marcus Spears.
Good job, Marcus Spears. All right, good. I'm glad we did that. Pettycast, we continue. Maybe the pettiest person on Twitter since the end of the Rockets game is Momster. Terea Eason. mother of Tari Eason. I really respect the way she defends her son and defends the Rockets on social media. There were way too many tweets to read all of them, Seth, but I picked out my three favorite ones that I will read. The ultimate petty here, the momster, Tari Eason's mom. This was right after the game. And this is to Warrior fans. Tari, would not only start, he'd still be your starting center right now. Mm-hmm. I know y'all don't think I'm done. Right now, starting, 40 minutes a game. This is just the beginning, and I'm not moving an inch from what I said. He'd be your starting 3, 4, or 5. God, I'm surprised she didn't say and 5. She really thinks highly of Tari, as she should. It's her son. Today, she says, good night, and then ends the tweet. All right, so that's number one.
Kayvon Looney played what, like his high was 11 minutes in the final game.
I'd
say Tari. I'd rather have Tari Eason.
Small ball center? Yeah, Tari. Why not? Give it a shot. She's replying to somebody in this one. Someone says, it's basketball, relax. I'm a Warriors fan. Oh, defending Tari Eason, says her tweets made the series more enjoyable. She replies to this person, and they're both talking about somebody who went after her. Oh, that was mild racism. I've heard worse. I'm never going to be on a court yelling at players. I'm on my page, minding my business, talking about my son. She capitalized all those my's. No other fan base has acted like this. The entitled Warriors know it's almost over. And this is what I love, Seth. They're taking it out on sweet little old me. With the crying emoji. She Southern belled it there at the end.
I'm just somebody sticking up for my son and enjoying a little bit of round ball. That's
sweet
all.
Sweet little old me. Yeah. All right, last one is a comment tweet of Draymond.
What was she? She was responding. She said it was mild. Okay, I can't read this entire. There was something in this chain
something
of tweets
in there
that was mildly racist.
Yeah,
okay,
it was the Southern Belle part of it.
Too many tweets for me to keep up with it.
Yeah, it was the Southern Belle part of it. I thought it was funny. I thought you'd get a kick out of that. The last one is to Draymond Green. Draymond said something about the Rockets. Said spoiled milk with a bunch of laughing emojis. And then she says this. Retweeted it and said, man waited till the plane left Houston for this, to tweet this. Found a team that wasn't taking his BS, LOL. You got it, Dre. And you was my favorite Warrior. My boyfriend's going to drag me over this one. I was always standing up for your cage-fighting ass. Timberwolves, she tags the Timberwolves. Timberwolves, all caps, eat him alive! Exclamation points after that. Yeah,
she does petty right. We might have to find a video of her to use as a drop when we do the petty cast.
Yes.
She's about as petty as it gets in all the right ways.
She's unbelievable, man.
I'm kind of scared of her. Like,
oh, 100%.
You know, I would totally, if she was in my personal circle or something, I'd be kind of nervous about responding to her texts and
everything. Even construe this as criticism. Like, no, you're being
lauded in the petty cast.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Hey, speaking of that Minnesota Golden State series, this is from Anthony Edwards. This was 2 years ago, saying I don't think he's faced him yet in the playoffs, saying he wants the Warriors, and he gives the exact reason why.
What are you looking forward to most of this upcoming season?
Definitely going back to the playoffs and going further in the playoffs to go versus the Warriors. I want to play the Warriors. I want to get to the Warriors. Wherever they at, I want to get to them.
Got you. Why the Warriors so much?
Because Draymond talks so much trash. That's pretty much the only reason.
Okay. So he wants Draymond. So this is going to be a fun series, man. You know, like
there was one that was a candidate for the petty cast, which was Anthony Edwards after they beat the Lakers. And it was just too many bleeps. It was him talking.
Oh, he curses like a sailor, man.
Him talking about just everything they were saying about the Lakers before the series, what the Lakers themselves were saying, Lakers fans and everything. But it was, I would say two bleeps to one non-bleep per word. Yeah.
This will not be, as long as the Timberwolves are in the playoffs, I can virtually assure you that Anthony Edwards is going to appear in the petty cast. As long as they're in the postseason, he will be in the petty cast. Dude, when they beat the Lakers, they beat them in LA to close out that series because it was game 5. So they beat them at crypto.com arena. He walked around, he took a lap around the arena, like walked around, like as the fans were still like buzzing and hanging out around the stadium because he just wanted to take in all the misery among the Lakers fans. Like he is highly petty.
This is really a celebration of pettiness, is it more so this morning than even you and I being petty.
Yeah.
Marcus Spears,
yep.
Tara Eason's mom, and Anthony Edwards just exemplifying some classy, classy pettiness. That's, I like it.
You know, and the two of them, I would say Momster and Anthony Edwards might be Mount Rushmore pettiness people.
Yeah.
You know, they might be on the Mount Rushmore of pettiness.
I got to live up to that standard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. I think you can do it. All right, here's one. This is an old clip, but I think worth playing, as long as we're on this basketball theme in the Pettycast. This was J.J. Redick calling out his guys in the postseason press conference, the day after the Lakers were knocked out of the playoffs, calling out his guys, but we think one in particular.
The work that's required in an offseason to be in championship shape. And, you know, we have a ways to go as a roster. And certainly there are individuals that were in phenomenal shape. There's certainly other ones that could have been in better shape. That's where my mind goes immediately is you know, we have to get in championship shape.
Okay, so we all know who that was about.
Yeah.
That was as passive aggressive as it gets.
That was about Doncic. Yeah. But also, it's also curious because he also, I don't know if LeBron James, 1 year older, if he chooses to play basketball again, is going to necessarily be the kind of guy that can play an entire half in a game five. Or was that game four?
It was game four. Yeah,
it was game four where he kept the starters in the entire second half.
Yep.
Redick also, in classic petty fashion, displacing blame when he's faced a lot of criticism for his substitutions and his rotations. Yes, yeah, that was good petty. Being petty without naming Doncic,
yep.
So passive-aggressive,
yep.
But also in displacing some of the scrutiny he's faced. That's good petty, J.J. Redick.
Which is very interesting because as the internet pettied over J.J. Redick, they pointed this out. This was J.J. Redick a year ago, maybe, when he was still in broadcasting, talking about Doc Rivers and the Bucks getting knocked out of the postseason and Doc Rivers not taking any accountability for it.
I've seen the trend now. I've seen the trend for years.
What's the trend?
The trend is always making excuses. Get Doc, we get it. Taking over a team in the middle of the season is hard. It's hard. We get it. Just like getting traded in the middle season is hard for a player. We get it. Mm-hmm. But it's always an excuse. There's just no. There's never accountability with that guy.
Well,
there's never accountability.
Never accountability. Throwing the pen down. You heard that.
He threw the pen down.
You heard the pen. Now here's J.J. Redick right after his team got knocked out of the playoffs a week ago.
We played 13 games with our playoff rotation in the regular season. Bron and Luka obviously played more than that together, but these things take time. You know, Luka just went through it in Dallas with Kyrie, and doesn't happen overnight.
Okay,
they're out of shape. We only got 13 games.
They're out of shape. We didn't get to play together very much. You know,
right,
Seth, these things take time.
These things take time.
Yeah.
LeBron James is just a young guy that, you know, you give him time to. 2 or 3 years from now,
can you imagine?
If you look forward, that this team is really going to be something, guys.
It is a version of what people are saying about Jalen Green. Like, hey, the two greatest players in the world just need time. You know?
The Lakers, you know, I mean, sometimes it takes trading for a superstar 3 or 4 times before you can actually get out of the first round of the playoffs.
You lost in 5.
Yeah.
In no small part because you played a bunch of olds in the second half of a game for 24 minutes. And Luka's not old, but he may as well be. He's 28 in a 52-year-old man's body,
mm-hmm.
You know, and they're out there playing. Honestly, like, I think it was dumber to play Luka an entire half than it was 41-year-old LeBron.
Right.
Just the eye test of it, you know? Like,
he's only had 13 games to really figure out with those guys,
that's
Sean.
True.
So,
yeah,
that's true. Meanwhile, you know, like, I don't know, Jimmy Butler's only been on the Warriors for so long as well. More than 13 games, but still.
Yep.
Yeah.
Here was Tyreek Hill. This is yesterday. Tyreek Hill did the thing that, Seth, you have advised athletes not to do. He was on his Instagram live stream, and he looked like he was taking questions from people on there.
Yeah.
And if somebody asks
you to power rank something, don't do it.
Do it.
You
no,
go by all means. If you want to power rank somebody, just and you think about it, and you sit down in with a pen and paper and do it, then by all means do it.
Yeah.
But don't just respond to a question and answer it off the cuff, because this is what happens when Tyreek Hill names his top 5 quarterbacks.
He said, can I rank my top 5 quarterbacks?
Lamar, Josh, Pat, obviously. No, this is no order, by the way. Baker Mayfield. And Joe B. Joe Shiesty, too.
Joe Burrow. Joe B is Joe Burrow. So he's like, he's like,
and you can tell he's just doing, he's doing it off the top of his head. Throws, hey, good. Shout out to Baker Mayfield in there.
Tough. Okay. Tough, man.
And you leave off your actual quarterback of your team.
Leaves Tua out there, which I would have said, well, it's Tua. But he had, and Baker had a good year. I get it.
Yeah. Oh, no, 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 for
but
sure.
The, like, Baker is, like, that Baker was a no-brainer number four for him on the list.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where immediately people say, like, well, he's just saying what he thinks is the truth. Right. You don't have, everything that's true does not have to be said when it comes to interpersonal relations. And,
he,
you know.
He has a podcast called It Needed to Be Said. All right.
Yeah. Oh, is he It Needed to Be Said or It Needed to Be Said?
It Needed to Be Said was the name of his podcast, which, as best I can tell, lasted like three episodes because there's been no more clips going viral from it.
So it's at the end of the day, probably not a big deal, and it's not like it's not like Tua probably doesn't expect to hear weird things out of Tyreek Hill's mind, but it becomes something that you hear about and read about that you don't really need your teammates hearing about and reading about.
But remember when Tyreek first got to Miami and he said that Tua is the most accurate quarterback he'd ever played with, and people were like, bro, you played with Patrick Mahomes, like, and he stood on the table for Tua. Now he's just like, yeah, Patrick, of course. Patrick is in there. So I thought that was pretty funny. Who would you rather have, Baker Mayfield or Tua?
Who were his five?
It was Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, and Joe Burrow.
Okay.
Yeah. I think most people would agree with four out of those five.
He left Mahomes out of there?
No, he's in there. I said Mahomes.
He said Mahomes?
Yeah,
okay.
Mahomes. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It's a weird time for quarterbacks right now because honestly, it really, like, it takes a little bit of thinking to think about who the top five are, just to round out the fifth guy.
Well, all of it's funny you say that. Those five guys he named, you know, four of the five, you can look at statistics from last season and say, oh, yeah, like, I can see where you make a case for them being in the top five. The one that you can't is Patrick Mahomes. Like, Mahomes statistically isn't anywhere on the same planet as the. And I'll include Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield he had over 40 touchdown passes last year. Like,
You could almost say, if you heavily weight last year into it, and I'm just, you know, I'll wait on Jaden Daniels. It's just, you can kind of, the top three, I would say, okay, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow. To get four and five, it takes some serious, you got to sit down with a legal pad and really hash it out.
Yeah.
It's a weird time in NFL quarterbacking.
It is. Like, then that, now that you and I lay it out that way, I'm like, God, is it the craziest thing to put Baker in there? Like, you know, like.
Right. And like, wait, Jalen Hurts is just left out. Like, I got to have Jalen Hurts in the top five.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. He just won the Super Bowl. That's true.
Yeah. And yet the four and five is, it's a wide open field depending on which criteria you want to use.
Tua or Baker, who would you rather have? Point blank. Just quick. Gut reaction. Who would
Baker?
You Baker. Yeah, I would too. I would. He's more
because I think he's going to be healthy for the next 3 years.
No, that's true.
And that's an easy cop out.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if Tua is going to even be playing football 3 years from now.
The latest odds on the World Series, the American League, etc., I think are the clearest illustration of where we are right now. The uncharted territory that we are at right now with this era of Astros baseball. I'll explain coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
People like Tari Eason's mom and her saltiness on social media. I do too. I just don't want her to put Tari too far out over his skis. You know what I mean?
I feel like Tari.
Like, she's basically saying he can start for the Warriors at all five positions. You know, like,
look, Momster, as she's known on X, is she's relatively new to us. It's been a couple of years now that we've known that she gets feisty. Tari's had a lifetime of understanding that his mom's feisty, and he's probably pretty comfortable with it. He can probably compartmentalize. You know what? You know what you don't worry about with Tari is that I think Tari's mom can take care of Tari's mom. She can handle her own business. So I don't think Tari probably feels any pressure to defend his mom or anything like that.
No.
That's what I worry about. If it weighed heavily on him that, oh, no, my mom, oh, she's a delicate creature and she needs to be protected. I think Tari feels like, mom can handle business. I was the personal brunt of it at times growing up. And yeah, she's a tough woman. She's fine on her own.
Y'all should get Tari's mom on the show. Get her to read her own tweets, LOL.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah.
We could get her to respond to, I feel like, you know, sometimes I like when they bring the celebrities on and they have to read mean tweets about them. The problem with doing it with Tari's mom is that I believe she's probably already read every single one of them. So we're not going to be able to surprise her with a mean tweet.
Someone, Nikos on the text line says, me and my girl had drinks with Tari's mom at Toyota Center. She's good people. I've heard that too. My prism for stuff like that is Vanessa Richardson, and I know Vanessa really likes her a lot. So that's, I've heard the same thing. And she's amazing on Twitter. Let's go. Yeah, let's go. All right, the latest odds for the World Series, the American League, and the AL West. This is probably the lowest point in Astros odds history during the run here. I think they're still inside. They may have one leg out the window, and their head may be, you know, kind of just inside and one leg inside the window, but they're still inside the window of contention. You know, they can win the division and make the postseason, and by virtue of making the postseason, you remain inside the potential championship window, but I think half their body is out the window right now.
The one thing I would say, and is that, like, we always have to, I'm guessing early in the 2020, like the first half of the 2020 COVID season, I bet they were pretty low on
I
that.
Don't know, is man. There? Like, because I think there were eight teams that were going to make the playoffs. They were hovering around the fringe. I'd have to go back and look. But like, I would think like last year when they were what?
Yeah, I'm way off.
June
of 2020, they were still 12-1. That doesn't seem.
Well, the COVID season hadn't started in June yet.
When did it start?
Late July.
Okay, all right. I'd have to go a little
so
bit.
Maybe at some point, like in September when it looked like they might not make the postseason in the COVID year, possibly. But I think, like, let's take the COVID season out of it, like in the normalized seasons. If I went back and looked, I would bet the Astros had better odds to win the World Series this time a year ago when they were 12-22. Than they do right now at 17-17. And some of that may have to do with the fact that, you know, Seattle has shown themselves to be a good team early on. So they did last year, too. The Astros are 22-1 to win the World Series. And they're a 500 baseball team. They're 22-1. They're 12th on the list. They're closer to being in the literal middle of the pack than they are being talked about amongst contenders. Like, the teams around them in the odds right now, Seth, are Boston, Detroit, Seattle, Arizona, Baltimore. No mention of a New York team, no mention of the Dodgers, no mention of any of the other teams that you view as true contenders in all this. They are 22-1 to win the World Series. They're 8-1 to win the American League, tied for fifth. Like, even when things have been going bad for the Astros, the odds makers and the betting community still seem to concede that they're one of the three or four best teams, at least in the American League. Mm-hmm. And they're not right now.
This is as bad as it was in September of 2020. A little bit better. The Astros were +2500 to win the World Series.
Yep.
They didn't look as good as the team right now does look. It's like, this is COVID. You just throw it out the window. And as all of our listeners have echoed on the text line this morning, when Espada says, "Hey, he knows the offense is going to break out at some point."
Yeah.
How can you be so sure of that? Mm-hmm. The one guy that you should feel best about eventually breaking out is currently on the IL in Yordan Alvarez. Altuve, you know, despite his awesome start, is down to, he's below a 700 OPS
right
now.
He's in the 600s right now, man.
There's Jake Myers is one of the bright spots. And look, hey, Paredes and Walker started off really slow, and they've started to look better, but it's not like it's not like it's offensive fireworks abound when he's playing at his best. Who am I missing here that I'm supposed to be waiting for to break out and really explode?
The best version of Peña, and Peña's actually been okay. Like, he's been one of their better guys, you know?
Peña is what you hope for out of a shortstop traditionally, at least. It's like, okay, he's awesome defensively. And look at this. He's a good batter as well, but he's not going to be leading the gold rush in batting.
No, he's not. He's batting leadoff because he's got speed. He ain't batting leadoff because he gets on base a ton. And because they don't have many other good options. So it's a great question, Seth. That would have been the follow-up question. And I know it's a press conference after a game, so you're not diving deep. But that would have been the follow-up question is, who do you expect to break out? And if I'm going to err to the side of optimism here. So I'm going to be glass half full. Isak Paredes was an all-star last year. He hit over 30 home runs. I think Isak Paredes would be on. Keep in mind, these guys are all 600, low 700 OPS. So like all of them have hit better in their careers for the most part than where they are right now. So I would say Isak Paredes. Christian Walker has been a very consistent offensive performer over the last 3 years. A 30 home run, like 80, 90 RBI guy. I think he's one of the ones that Joe Espada has in his head. And I think Yainer Diaz has started to hit the ball a little bit better of late. I think Yainer, like those are, if I'm looking at the guys, I mean, you need Altuve and Yordan need to be all-star level for this team to do anything. So of the others that are in there, I think the big three would be Isak Paredes, Christian Walker, and Yainer Diaz.
I mean, Paredes is a career 755 OPS guy. I mean, it's so in terms of what we're accustomed to with the Astros when it comes to really busting out offensively, it's just not the same team. They are like, this is a team that the pitching has to lead them if they're going to be a genuinely elite major league team. The batting needs to, you know, much improve on what they've been so far. So the biggest question marks for me and whether or not they can actually contend or not are what exactly is going to happen with Ronel Blanco? How does Lance settle in and does he stay healthy? What the hell's going on with Framber? There's a lot of discomfort there and things that could go wildly one direction or the other and all of that.
Yeah, and as I sit here and think of like, that, it's a really good question. Like, who do you expect to break out, Joe Espada? Like, where do Zach DiZenzo and Cam Smith sit in that conversation? You know, what if they're still, you know, DiZenzo just doesn't see a lot of time. Cam Smith has been up and down. If this team still has an OPS that's in the bottom five in baseball, but they're contending at the trade deadline, do you make a move for a bat? I don't think they're going to need an arm. Do you make a move for a bat somewhere? And if you're doing that, then who are you moving out? You know, like, who are you? Are you stymieing the growth or the development of one of those young guys, particularly Cam Smith? It would take Cam Smith to be just utterly, utterly horrible for them to all of a sudden just sit him down or send him down to the minor leagues. I think grooming Cam Smith to be one of the cornerstones of the future of this team is something that they will do all season long, even if it's to the minor detriment of day-to-day baseball. You know what I mean? Like, I think they will tolerate a subpar OPS and the whatever glitches come with trying to get a rookie to, you know, a talented rookie up to his talent level, to play up to his talent level. I think they'll tolerate that, you know, with Cam Smith in tandem with trying to do whatever it is they're trying to accomplish as a team.
Let's just check.
You got that I'm looking things up look on your face.
Well, just on my misery index and just how bad should I allow myself to feel about something.
Yeah.
As far as the hitting stats in general, for team batting average, the Astros are actually 15th right now.
They get lots of hits, but they're all singles.
It's the OPS that's really strong. Right, yeah. And when they have the bases loaded, that lack of power or even the ability to hit at all. I mean, they're hitting 144 with the bases loaded this year. They've had the seventh most opportunities in the league to do it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they're in their OPS. They're 21st in OPS right now.
And they get lots of singles, man. They get lots of singles. Text message. Can you imagine how Tari's mom was when he was playing Little League ball? Like sitting in the stands there? Yeah.
I don't know, though. She might be. I don't know. Now, James Harden's mom was notably vocal. Is Tari's mom as vocal?
I have no idea.
At the actual games? I think that Tari, there's a lot of people that you meet when you meet them in real life. They're just so much different than their online persona.
Yes.
Tari's mom might have just been, you know, the group texts might have been vicious, perhaps, maybe. But she might not necessarily be a natural extrovert
or
a yeller or something like that. Yeah.
Could be, yeah. People are asking, what are the division odds? Seattle is plus 105. So they're a coin flip to win the division. The Astros are plus 225, which is a little over 2-1. Keep in mind, the Astros were trailing by 10 games last year in June, and like by the All-Star break, they had gotten back into first place. I don't know. I just don't know that they've got that kind of run in them this year.
Yeah. You know what? The other thing, too, is various other players have started to look better at the plate and shown more of it. You know, Yiner started to figure it out, especially compared to what he was earlier in the year. The part about exploding or whatever is they haven't been hitting with power, but they were one of the worst batting averages in the league for a while. And to the point where, nobody cares about batting average anymore, but when you've got a really bad batting average, it's bad. Like, they fought their way back up to the middle of the pack. They've had a boatload of bases loaded situations and done nothing with it. So I'm talking myself into this, Sean. Bear with me and everybody else. It is just a little bit of launch angle here, a little bit of hard hit percentage there, just a little bit more. It's just they're close, Sean.
They're not going to hit 144 or whatever it is with the bases loaded all year. Says you just now, basically. I'm with you on that. Like, there'll be, and to a degree, I'm with you on Joe Espada. It's just like none of the names other than Yordan. None of the names we're talking about here are names where you're like, oh yeah, that guy starts hitting, then it's on. You know, whereas the lineup used to have like five guys like that. All right, best value pick for each team in the NFL draft. This one, I think, this is the one pick for the Texans that is being universally lauded, and this is certainly one we'll ask Nick Caserio about when we have him on tomorrow at 7:30. Who is it? We will tell you coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Best value pick for each team. I love articles like this. The NFL Draft, this is courtesy of the Athletic NFL staff. They did the best value pick from the 2025 NFL Draft for each team. By way of example, you know, like Arizona Cardinals, they got Will Johnson, the cornerback from Michigan, who was supposed to be a first-rounder. They got him in the middle of the second round. That's theirs. Shedeur Sanders is the Browns' best value pick, a day one or two quarterback they got in the fifth round, that kind of thing. I like these articles because I like to predict beforehand who it is in here.
Mm-hmm.
And, Seth, if you were to – I think you probably know who it is already just by looking at the rundown. But the one they pick is the one that, A, I picked in my head before I opened the article, and, B, this seems to be far and away the pick that the Texans are getting the most praise for, and that's Jalen Knoll, the wide receiver out of Iowa State, with the 79th overall pick, to the extent that I've seen so many people saying they had grades on Jalen Knoll of a second rounder. I've even seen back end of the first round from some graders. And again, the draft experts are different than front offices, as we've learned. But it makes me feel like when I hear everybody talking about Jalen Knoll, it makes me feel surprised he made it all the way to the 79th pick in the draft.
Right, right. And I think some of that is just the size dynamic, too.
Yes.
It's only recently that slot receivers have gotten respect in the draft, and they're still, you know, depending on how it all lays out in any given year, it's not a slam dunk that you're going to go high in the second round or what have you. But I would have guessed Jalen Knoll because yesterday I was going through and kind of just looking at, you know, various draft grades and recaps, and Jalen Knoll's name keeps popping up as the guy that was the most intriguing, the best value, whatever it might be, that people just love Jalen Knoll. This was from The Athletic. Knoll was expected to be a second rounder, so this is a good get. He's highly productive, recording 245 catches for yada, yada, yada. He's a polished route runner and should fit well with quarterback C.J. Stroud. Like, that's largely, by and by, that's what everybody was saying about Jalen Knoll.
Yeah, yep.
Oh, we'll have to play this later. I've got the pre-draft assessment of Jalen Knoll from Chris Sims, and I find it very entertaining.
Oh, okay.
But the funniest thing is, before the draft, all these guys, you listen to them talk about Jalen Knoll, and they're like, oh my gosh, oh, he's so, ooh, yeah, he's so, this, that, the other thing. And yet, they didn't have him very high on the ranking.
Right, right,
so
right.
So there is that. I like it if he turns out to be kind of the kind of pick that you would classically get from either the Steelers or the Ravens, where, all right, not all the measurables were quite right. The guy wasn't as big as somebody wanted or this or that, but he can just play football, and he's got really good football character and all of that. It seems like before the draft, even guys that didn't have Jalen Knoll ranked as high on the receiver rankings were still talking about him way more effusively with their praise and with more enthusiasm than a lot of the guys above him. So I'm intrigued. I just want to meet the young
fella. Well, those are the guys you're talking about, the ones that are talking him up and yet have him down on their list, are probably guys who buy more into 40 times and size, you know, size, weight, speed. You know,
well, it's the size part of it, too, because, I mean, he's got all the measurables on the speed side of it.
I just meant, like, in general, they're probably more traitsy draft experts or front office people than the Texans are. Like, the Texans are willing to – they'll ignore a 40 time. Like, they're not as caught up in the size element. I shouldn't say they're not as caught up. If they weren't as caught up, maybe they would have drafted him in the second round instead of the third round. But I think that I don't think it's an accident that he's on the Texans. Let's just put it that way. Here's Emory Hunt. This is Emory Hunt is a draft expert. He's Ross Tucker has him on his podcast.
Ross Tucker has him on his draft podcast.
Yep.
Yeah.
And here is Emory Hunt making a comp for Jalen Knoll.
Knoll to me, Ross, reminds me so much. I know this lofty praise, but how he plays and how he conducts his business reminds me so much of Steve Smith Sr. I thought that one was a huge steal. He's going to have an impact role right away as a rookie.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about the measurables, I guess the thing that jumps out when you watch him is, like, he didn't have, by wide receiver standards, he didn't have an elite 40 time. He had a good 40 time. Yeah. But his broad jump and his vertical are like 97th percentile.
Oh, really?
And you can see that when he plays. He's a muscled up dude. Like, he's kind of looks more like a running back in some ways than he does a wide receiver. And you can kind of see the explosiveness with each step that he takes. And when he's not super polished as a route runner, but he's got all the traits as he's running his routes where he just needs to clean some things up. That the physical upside is very much there. He's just also a smaller dude, and slot is a hard position to forecast sometimes because there's so much of a mental side to it. That's where the off field gushing and being a 2-year captain and everything else like that. That comes into it because you need to have a guy that is going to work. Remember, like, Braxton Miller was a bit of the opposite of that.
Yes.
I think Braxton Miller was a guy that had all the athletic ability but didn't seem to really want to grind and learn the game of football. Jalen Knoll's the opposite of that.
Jalen Knoll snatches that ball too, man. He's got really good – both those guys, both the Iowa State kids. I think Jaden Higgins' drop stats are – ridiculously good. Like, they're both very reliable.
This is a week that's been annoying me a little bit because, by and large, most of the content being put out is all just still post-mortem on the draft.
Evaluation
of draft classes and everything. But I get it because the top headlines right now, Sean,
tell me if you were
negligent in putting any of these into our headlines today.
Okay.
Well, you did put one. Okay. Ravens make tough decision,
That's a big story.
It's a big story, but it's almost something that you knew was going to happen, and it's a kicker. It's not Deshaun Watson.
I don't know. I was I guess drafting a kicker probably increased the chance, but whatever the case. Yeah, that's a big, that's a big story.
NFL expects 1 million plus fans to attend the 27 draft in Washington, D.C.
The 27 draft?
Yeah.
Draft 2 days from now, or 2 years from now, yeah.
Browns linebacker Devin Bush arrested and charged with assault. That's like from 3 days ago.
That's the third headline right now?
Yeah. Fourth headline. Gruden joins arena team as part owner and advisor.
Well, if he'd ever return my text, I'd be happy to talk about that with him.
Oh, he's such a tease.
Yeah. You gave me your number, John Gruden, all right? Return my text.
Okay. This one, we're not going to touch because I just don't feel like it. I don't want the text line to be. Trump plan cuts funding for brain injury research. That's related to the NFL
Let's dig into that one for a couple segments.
Let's dig into. Nobody loves talk more on this sports radio show than our listeners want two things. One, talk about CTE and brain injury research.
Yeah, they
and
love
two,
that.
Trump. Yeah. Yes.
That's the worst version of a Reese's peanut butter cup ever. They're like, ooh, chocolate and peanut butter. This is amazing. They don't say that. Ooh, CTE and Trump. Ooh, yes.
This was annoying me yesterday because this was one of the lead headlines in the afternoon. Fans vote ex-wide receiver Julian Edelman into the Pats Hall of Fame. Good for him.
Yeah.
I don't care. Okay, I didn't know he wasn't in already.
It's a Hall of Fame story, Seth.
Yeah. Second suspect charged in death of Super Bowl reporter. I didn't know anybody got shot, and good job catching the first one.
Oh, I vaguely remember that story. Yeah, the Super Bowl reporter. Yeah.
Phil Simms, number 11, to stay retired amid Abdul Carter's
That's from like 4 days ago also.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is Tank's not on the headlines anymore? He was yesterday.
He was at the bottom of the NFL.com headline.
Oh, NFL.com.
I got
you.
He's in good spirits.
Yeah, that was a headline. Tank being in good spirits. Not a Houston headline, a national headline. Boy, you're right.
ESPN revamped their, and then the last one was the revamped power rankings after the draft. ESPN has the Texans. Take a guess.
We did this, I think. I want to say 10th?
13th,
okay. Yeah. I know that one of them had them 10th.
And to be clear, these are the ESPN NFL headlines.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's other
not
headlines
elsewhere. Right. Yeah, man. So Nick is coming on tomorrow at 7:30. Should we ask him to do something that maybe could pop a headline or two for us? I mean, the headlines...
Something about Julian Edelman and how he thought he was going to suck.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. We got to pull him into that bear trap. Yeah, so what... What were the reasons you thought Julian Edelman wouldn't make it as a football player?
He had all these off-field issues that have never been publicized before. I'll tell you what, when Julian Edelman got to us, we had to untangle a whole legal mess.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
For anybody that just tuned in, that was complete and total sarcasm.
Yes.
Please don't.
There's
somebody that turned on their radio just as I was saying Julian Edelman had all these issues.
Yep. Yeah. Someone said, not power rank, but a tale of the tape, Tari's mom and Mama Sterner.
Those two would do a good podcast.
I think they'd get along great.
No, you know what they'd be great with? With reaction videos.
Yes.
Just like them watching stuff and talking about how stupid the people are in the videos.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I would love that. I would love that.
Because they drank a Coors Light.
Mm-hmm. For sure. The Astros, talking about the window that they are in right now, the championship window. I made the analogy of an actual window that they've got one leg out right now. The Astros currently have their head stuck in the window like it's a guillotine, and they're waiting to see if they can get through it before it drops.
Ooh.
But you're not trying to get through it. You're trying to stay inside. You know, you're trying, you don't want to jump out the window.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. Am I alone in this? Of all the you know, kind of time-tested methods of execution, I still feel like I might prefer the guillotine. Over a lot of the other ones. I would prefer it to the electric chair. That looks miserable.
It's the quickest. I as long as I knew, I would want to check the sharpness of the blade before. I would want to make sure that thing is going to go all the way through. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't need thing stopping like midway through my spine.
It goes for any of the execution methods. You know? Like, I don't want the firing squad to be shooting 22s.
But I think you have to ask yourself, if the method goes wrong, how bad would it be? You know what I mean?
How bad? That would be a rough one.
Right? Like, I think it's got to factor in like 10%. Like, okay, if it goes wrong, how bad? Smoothly, that's the best one. Like, bam.
They
Done.
Do think that you maintain a bit. There's a chance you maintain some consciousness after your head's lopped off, which I think would be kind of trippy.
No,
okay?
are you trippy? Get out!
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I've never seen the world from this spinning perspective.
Can you spin me over? I'm face down right now.
I would be. It would be fun. If you like, let's say you're suffering from a sprained ankle.
Right.
At the very least, as soon as you get decapitated and you're still conscious, like, oh, my ankle pain is gone.
Not my problem.
Yeah,
not my problem.
Those nerve messages aren't even being sent.
That's funny. All right, into the.
I don't want the gas chamber. I don't want the electric chair.
No,
I don't. I don't want to be hanged. God no.
No, that'd be the worst one.
That'd be the worst one.
I think that'd be the worst one, yeah.
Especially if you don't break your neck.
Yes.
It can take
a
long time.
Right. That's my point. Like, I need to know what the percentage chances of failure are for each of these.
I don't, for the life of me, I still don't understand how anybody ever thought at some point, like, oh, yeah, electrocuting them is the far more humane way to go.
Dude.
I feel like that was Big Electric back in the day.
Yeah, probably.
They were like, oh, listen, they you know, handed some envelopes to government officials and were like, hey, listen, you know, we're trying to make a name for this new power that we have.
You do, sir or ma'am. I'm a lobbyist for the electric chair in Washington, D.C. to get that as the preferred method of capital punishment. All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. All right, back to the Rockets. This is the fifth time they've lost to the Golden State Warriors in the postseason. Each of the other four times, they followed up with big moves. Let's hope they've got a better hit percentage this time around if they opt for a big, big move. We'll recap history coming up next.